Welcome everyone to the episode 8 of the Office Hours podcast. Today we have with us Mo, and it's going to be yet another fun conversation. Welcome, Mo.
Thank you, Vasily. How you doing?
I'm doing rather well. Weather is great. It's no longer super hot. We get a little bit of wind, so it's nice and pleasant. It's a very chill atmosphere to do the podcast. And I wanted to introduce something. I've created a Telegram group and a channel where the videos are going to be posted and announced, and there's also a chat so people can leave their reactions and comments. I'll probably edit in the QR code for that thing somewhere roughly over here or maybe over there. It'll be there, and if you scan it, you'll join right away. So hopefully we'll see some of you there. All right.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to seeing everyone there. So today, basically, I have some things I would like to discuss with you. Mm-hmm. You know, in tech, there's always different trends and different things coming up every day. So I'm curious, you know, like one time I listened to this advert on YouTube. It was someone talking about no code. Mm. So he built his own entire company using no code. And then right. I started wondering, like, this is an interesting one. What do you think about this particular technology?
Mm. That is a great question. I have a couple of different views on it. Like, it's not the first time that I've seen it attempted. I think in one of our first episodes, we talked about how a lot of programming these days is just glue, like connecting different bits and pieces together with some logic in between. And so for some things, naturally, if you have these services, you can use tools like Zapier or whatever to, you know, have them webhooks call into Zapier, and then Zapier calls some API on the other side. And it's just like orchestrating all of these different things together. And you can build something out of that. Nothing really wrong with that. And on the other hand, I've seen it before where a company I was working for, a portion of the company was busy doing consulting, implementing CRMs. And they were busy implementing CRMs for customers. One of them was Pivotal. And Pivotal had this really sophisticated system of building data flows without writing code. It would kind of be like you have these building blocks on screen, and then you use your mouse, you drag them around, and like you connect these different pipes together, and you put like the filters and everything. Kind of like if you're using a node editor for your graphics production or something like that, very similar to that. And they say, hey, you know, anybody can do it. You don't have to learn any code. You don't have to write any code. But what it ended up doing, it's okay, you're not writing code, but you still need a programmer's mindset to operate it. So it just created a different class of programmer, the one that was tailored to operate that particular interface. But you still need to think like a programmer, and you still need to understand the mechanics and how it actually works inside. And so I think on some very basic things, an average person can probably come in and do something. But as soon as it gets to anywhere near more complex, maybe that illusion will shatter. It's to me, it's very similar to a lot of the frameworks, because the frameworks, they say, hey, if you play by our rules and if you color within the lines, everything's going to be great. It'll just work. You don't really have to think about it. It's just like magic, you know. It's kind of like, you know, Ruby on Rails. You say, Rails generate me this, Rails generate me that, and then you connect it all together. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. And yeah, you can go really far using that. And then you hit that edge case that the framework doesn't support, and you have to work around it. And that's where all of the fun starts. Actually, I was there's this new thing on LinkedIn where they kind of ask you to, they have an article, and then various experts can sort of chime in and leave their comments on various passages on these articles. And they had one about frameworks, and a lot of people were saying, oh yeah, like pick React over Angular or pick this over that. And my comment was, The first thing you have to consider when picking a framework is that the framework, first of all, is going to be a constraint. And if you can live with that constraint, sure, fair enough, go for it. And so no code, in a way, to me, it's very similar. It will create a different breed of programmers that can build on these platforms once the complexity reaches a certain level. And it's putting all of these constraints on you. And if they can fit for the type of thing you're trying to build, hey, go for it. Like, nothing against it. In fact, I heard a couple of success stories of some sort of projects that are commercially viable have been built on these no-code platforms. So if it works for you, great. I think eventually you'll reach a limit, and then it will not stop working, but you will not be able to proceed without essentially rewriting the whole thing in something else. So that's kind of my thoughts on it.
So basically, what you're saying is that even though it's called no code, you still need a developer to build with it first. And then also, like, there are some certain things you would not be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's because, if I understand the idea very well, I think it's like generating codes, code generation. Like, you are using interface to create codes. That's how I understand it. Is that correct?
It's abstracting it away from you. I think in the most sort of contrived example, I don't know, are you aware of MIT, what's it called? Squeak. Squeak? It's like this visual interpreter that is used as a teaching tool for kids to learn how to code, because mm-hmm. you don't necessarily write code, but you assemble it from these tiny little blocks. It's MIT Scratch. Scratch is the right name.
Yeah.
You can go like scratch.mit.edu and you have an interface and you can build little games with it. It's kind of like a crossover between Adobe Flash and like Lego Automation Builder. You have like all of the concepts, like the loops, the conditions, they all expressed in these sort of tight, like little puzzle pieces, and then you plug them in together and mm-hmm. you're not right. I mean, a lot of them are corresponding to the actual things. So like they have a block that represents like a for loop, or they have a block that represents an if condition, and they're very explicit about it. It actually says for if, you know, on the blocks. So after you assemble them together, you could sort of see the basic structure of a computer program, but you're not typing in the actual code. You're sort of building it from pieces. So it's a layer of abstraction, and the no-code tools, they're a different kind of abstraction on top of same concepts. And I think that in some ways, to some degree, you still need to have the capacity to understand how code runs, how computers run it, how it's implemented, what sort of database you're talking to, like all of these different things. If you know that, you're going to be way better at it than if you don't. Same as with most programming languages, I think.
Yeah, but what's the point of it then? Because I'm trying to understand, like, what's the idea? Because it doesn't, I mean, maybe it makes like development simpler, maybe like you it is easier mm-hmm. for certain people who are not like as technically experienced, but if you still need all this knowledge for it to work, to work with it, like, I'm not sure what's the goal here.
I guess what I'm saying is you will definitely benefit from that knowledge at a certain level of complexity. And for simple things, you might not have to understand any of those things. However, I think it's also there. Well, partially because these platforms, they're usually commercial platforms, and they're hoping to get people who think, oh, I'm not technical, I don't want to do coding, but I want to do this thing. And, you know, they can get them in through the platform. I think it can also lower the barrier to entry for prototyping. Like, I want to validate if my business idea is even going to get off the ground, and I want to do it with least amount of effort possible. This no-code platform allows me to automate my way away of my problem and present it as a product. And if I have signups, awesome. And then later on, it can grow and maybe it'll transform and rewritten from scratch, from ground up, in like a proper language where you have more control over things. So it's like balance between how much control do you want to see to the framework versus how much control do you want to have? And then, you know, how complex does it have to be, how sophisticated your own understanding has to be. You're just sort of trying to find some sweet spot for some use cases. And if people manage to find that sweet spot for themselves, that's absolutely great.
I guess, yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, it depends on what they're trying to solve as a problem, really. But speaking of trends, right? Like, there's another thing that that has been like getting my attention recently. It's been a while. Web 3. It's a very it's a very popular trend now. Web 3. Everyone is saying like, you learn Web 3 and make a lot of money. Like, yeah. What is this? What is this thing?
I'm sort of tangentially familiar with Web 3, and it has been popular, but I think due to some natural economic patterns, like a lot of the Web 3 operates on Ethereum type token infrastructure. So it's like smart contracts based on Ethereum that integrate like with apps. You can build apps on the blockchain in a way, and there's various blockchains. And but ultimately, as much as people hate to admit it, a lot of that stuff is still really correlating really highly to overall price of Bitcoin versus US dollar. So when that considerably tanked, all of these other assets considerably tanked as well. And I mean, I know I had some investments, so to say, in various cryptos that have all been performing really poorly over the last year. So I don't know if that filtered out a lot of people out of that area, because suddenly it isn't worth as much. So why the hell are we spending time doing this? I mean, myself personally, I'm a big sort of proponent and believer in crypto in general. Ever since reading the original Bitcoin paper, like back in 2012, 2013 or something, that I was like, it's a really nice paper. It's like 2 pages long. You can read it and understand it without knowing that much sophisticated math and crypto even. So I read it back then and it was like, wow, this is something. This is going to be huge. And it is. And coming back to Web3, it's like, yeah, you can build apps on blockchain, and that is true. However, the problem is, it's like this extremely extremely devolved version of AWS, where in AWS, you know, you pay for everything, right? Every IOP you consume, every CPU cycle you burn through, every byte you write and read and send over the wire, you pay for everything. And so Web3 is basically the same thing. Like, you have to pay to run computations on this distributed system. The problem is that it's very expensive for what it offers, and it's very slow. Again, because of the blockchain nature, you know, blocks need to be assembled and processed, and smart contracts captured within those things have to be executed. So it's extremely slow. Not to where you can actually build an application that does something useful. The other part of the problem is, I've seen various applications built on Web3, and 99% of them are concerned with some type of token generation pool, or some sort of crypto farm, or some betting platform, aka invest with us and make more money on the platform, right? So it's just it's like self-perpetuating to just generate more tokens, hoping that they go up in value and you sell them and you make money. I haven't really seen an application that's actually useful outside of gambling, betting pools or farms. That's in Web3 space. And so far I haven't seen one. If you have one that you can think about where it actually does stuff, I'd be really interested to see what it is, but so far I haven't seen any.
Same. You know, I joined this Discord channel. I found the group on Twitter. I think it's a Learn Web3 DAO, something like that. So I joined the Discord channel, and then I listened to some of the conversations, because like they have like daily meetings and all. So I was just trying to like see like what kind of applications are they building, and then I noticed like it sustains like this, and I'm wondering like Like, do is this it's not it doesn't excite me as much, but I see the value and the point of it, but it's I'm not too sure if I'm convinced about it, especially like the amount of hype around it. I think it's because there's not a lot of people who know about it very much yet. That's why there's this amount of hype. And that would be because like it is very niched. It's a very niched
I think
skill.
it's like the worst aspects of a hype and a bubble at the same time. And bubble, well, I guess I was going to say not like a speculatory bubble, but it is also a speculatory bubble, but it's also like an information bubble where people are hyping about Web3 and they don't listen to anyone who's saying otherwise and they just hype one another. And it's this tiny community overall that is not really producing a lot of things of sort of public benefit for most part. But at the same time, it is really exciting in the sense that it's like this new technology, the decentralization aspect of it. If they can scale it to where the computations are actually practical, that would be really interesting. Like a lot of things about it are really interesting, but unfortunately it's still in this sort of snake oil stage where a lot of entrepreneurial characters with low morals are trying to, you know, extract as much of your money out of you as possible, covering up with a lot of hype things. I remember when like the DAOs and what was the other things? When like everybody was like emitting these new tokens and it was just hype nonstop, crazy, crazy, crazy. A lot of people lost a lot of money, which I think happens naturally in these type of things. And I think in terms of finance, I think we had a period of time where it was kind of wild, wild west in a sense, where you can get scammed out of your money and there's nothing nobody can do about it in terms of like the fiat currency and the government controlled currency. And then, you know, there's been regulations applied. So now it's not as easy to, and people kind of clued in more about various schemes that they can be had with, like pyramid schemes, like all of these different things. Like back in the day in Russia, pyramid schemes just destroyed so many people's lives ultimately because they invested into these pyramids and various other dishonest enterprises that just robbed them of their life savings entirely. But the 90s were a very crazy time where it was like essentially complete lawlessness and, you know, nothing could be done about it. So as much as people are getting educated about risks with financial instruments, the desire to have 1000% return overnight just, you know, it blinds everybody or almost everybody. And you know, yeah, don't invest anything you're not willing to lose
Exactly.
outright.
That's the first rule of investment. But like I think Web3, the hype around it came just along the same time as the metaverse hype, when they say we're going to live in the digital world. What do you think about this idea?
Well, Second Life has existed for decades now. You know, like,
Second Life,
yeah,
what is
Second Life, the virtual game where there's a
that?
second life that you can lead. And it used to be quite massive, like a whole virtual world. It was basically metaverse, before 3D glasses, or sorry, not 3D glasses, but before like an Oculus or some kind of virtual reality interface. It existed and it still exists. And, you know, people trade property for real money in Second Life, as crazy as that sounds. But people do weird things in general. So it's not new. It hasn't been new. It's a new twist on it because of really crazily sophisticated VR interfaces, which are really, really cool. In terms of us moving to the metaverse, on one hand, I would say no. But then on the other hand, I could also say yes. And let me explain why.
Yes, I'm curious.
Well, I think metaverse on its own probably is not very appealing, 'cause like it's very low fidelity. It's really crappy looking, to be honest. Those avatars are creepy as hell. Like the whole uncanny valley aspect of it is just massive. Like no way. And going into the domain of Papa Zuck under his auspices, it's like no way, not for me. But sadly, or I don't know if it's sadly or not, but at the same time, in parallel, ChatGPT came onto the scene, and also style transfer algorithms came about. Like it all kind of aggregated in the same spot.
I won't put ChatGPT in this hype, in this category of hype, because ChatGPT
Right, it has its own category of hype.
it's a different category.
But
But
like I'm not
this
really talking about hype specifically. I'm talking about the appeal of metaverse.
Okay.
Because if you combine conversational qualities of ChatGPT that can converse with you, right? You add on top of that style transfer style type AI, which can create persons, well, not necessarily style transfer, but like the ones that generate people's faces and bodies, like, you know, the one that produces visual output. You put that there. You put it into like a simulacrum of some sort of three-dimensional space where you have a virtual avatar that you can interact with your environment. And you put a lot of people who are in a very desperate situation, and that's a perfect escape. Because some company can create for them a virtual avatar designed and built for them based on their preferences using Midjourney type drawing AI on top of ChatGPT type conversational AI that can respond in the ways that those people would appreciate. Put it in a high fidelity 3D simulation where they have a sense of some semblance of presence, and it's like an escapist fantasy. I can have a perfect companion for my likes that is borderline, you know, reachable. And I'm pretty sure with the new advances in, like, you know, they have these they have this manipulator. It's been presented quite a while ago. It uses these ultrasonic transducers to vibrate at different frequencies and simulate various materials. So when you're touching it, they can make it feel like stone or metal or all of these different things, like in a sense of like a haptic feedback type deal. Those things are evolving. They're not as hype, right? Because they're fairly niche, but they do exist and they do evolve. And you know, you can have, you know, you will not, I don't think we're gonna have like 100% immersion anytime soon, but you know, people have been known to alleviate their distress and boredom with much simpler things. So this together would be a killer feature. So I think that way, a lot of people, a certain kind of people, can be drawn in and attracted into this virtual world as a means of escape. It's basically, it's gonna be like a designer drug that is tailored, made for you.
I mean, I'm concerned about like the impact on of these things on like actual social interactions. For example, like we don't even have it yet, and most people struggle with like actual social interactions. So,
Yes.
are we gonna be having our interaction in like digitally? Like, I'm
I don't think we're going to be
gonna.
having an interaction at all. Why would I go out and risk an interaction that can turn either violent? In recent days, you can see that there's like a lot of violence, even in prosperous countries. There's crazy amount of violence in the streets out of, you know, various reasons that I'm not going to go into. Or if I'm a guy and I don't know, I want to go talk to girls. And right now, if you look at things like Instagram and TikTok, your chances are so infinitesimally low. You're gonna get rejected brutally 99% of the time. Or I can go to Metaverse for my virtual girlfriend who's very nice to me, looks exactly how I want her to look, and, you know, tells me all the things I want to hear. Why would I bother? Like, what is a good reason for me to bother to go out and try to do something?
But that is very debatable.
It's sure, very of course. But it's like one perspective on why people would do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's quite debatable because this is my own view, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is the aspect of the digital socializations. Like, you can have a friend in the metaverse. You can, like, be... It's like someone writing a letter to you, but now with pictures, kind of, or something. Because it's, at the end of the day, it's still kind of imaginary. Mm-hmm. It's not real. You cannot have, like, physical contact on the metaverse.
For now.
Yeah. Like, for now, I don't see it happening.
In certain aspects of life, you can have a simulation of a physical contact. It's a very, very narrow domain.
I maybe that's true, because today I was watching a video about you can do like home exercise with Oculus.
Yeah,
you know, the old training thing, and you can actually have a sensation of like a real life sensation of the exercise that you're doing, but it's not the same thing. I don't think it's the same thing.
I mean, my friends, they have a Oculus set, and they have that little exercise game in it,
body
which I played.
Huh? Body weapon or something. Body.
I don't remember what it's called, but like you have to like lean and sit down and jump and like wave your hands about. And I gotta tell you, like after 20 minutes, I was sweating bullets. Like that thing, in terms of actually achieving a workout, you can achieve a workout. And I mean, I had a Nintendo Wii with the Wii Fit little scale. Mm-hmm. That thing was really cool. I mean, I had fun doing workouts. As silly as that sounds, I was having a good time just doing like regular workouts. I mean, they did it really well. But, you know, I can tell you that it's already happening right now. You know OnlyFans, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a platform allegedly created for content creators so they can interact with their audience. And then it kind of got hijacked by adult entertainment, shall we say. And it's been primarily driver of its fortunes is adult content on OnlyFans, where, you know, these girls, these quote-unquote models, they have their Instagram profile where they post fairly revealing pictures, and it's just like a funnel to get you to their OnlyFans, where you pay them $5 a month for their nudes or whatever, depending on how much you pay. And it creates, again, this very strange parasocial relationship. And it's been known many times where people, lonely guys, spend like all of their money on somebody who basically despises their existence, more or less. But hold on, let me finish. Because recently, some entrepreneuring people have been using Midjourney style AIs to generate full video of virtual girls posted on OnlyFans and collect money, and they talk to various people in their chat through ChatGPT. So instead of this being one girl who needs to take like 3 hours to record a clip for OnlyFans and publish it, and then she can selectively talk to one or two people at a time, they can talk to like 1,000 people at a time because it's ChatGPT, and they can generate these videos in a span of like 15 minutes and flood the platform with it. And it looks like a lot of these highly paid over OnlyFans streamers are going to be getting out of a job soon and be completely replaced with a virtual thing. And a lot of people don't even realize, because a lot of these accounts, they actually have like Instagram accounts and Twitter accounts where they post like pictures and videos, and people have no clue that that's not real. It's completely fake. It's a robot. They talk to it as if it was a real person. And whoever sweaty dude that's sitting in his basement somewhere who put it all together is like laughing all the way to the bank, because, you know, one sweaty dude is collecting a bunch of money from a bunch of other sweaty dudes.
I mean, if
that works in 2D with just videos and chat, you plug it into metaverse, same thing, right? Only next level of fidelity that you get out of that. You tell me.
I think it's good job in a way. It's a good hustle for the people who think of things like this and then they are able to do it.
For
I
the
mean,
first handful, probably. Because once the market is saturated, it's diminishing returns all the way, right? It's like
yeah, so
if you've cornered the market, if you have the first place in the queue, you're gonna get all of the profits. But once other people clue in, it only lasts for a short time before other people clue in.
Yeah, I think so. But to be able to think of an idea like this, I think it's pretty smart because, I mean, people would find what they want, find what they like, and you just, it's business. It's a demand and supply thing.
Yeah.
But for me, that doesn't solve the issue that I was thinking about when it comes to like socializing on in metaverse as compared to like actual socializing, because right now we have phones. We don't even have the metaverse yet. We have just our phones, and then it makes like socializing a bit different than it used to be. Like nobody even wants to go out to like be in a bar. Or like the other day, Elon was sending everybody to go outside to touch grass, which literally we needed to go outside to touch grass.
Yeah.
So I just imagine if this thing actually, because one time, funny, I don't know, like something happened. Like I was in a how do you say that? In a room on Clubhouse one time, and we were talking about this. We had this type of conversation on Clubhouse, and then someone was talking about how he started creating shoes to sell in metaverse, and I was wondering like why
Because people will buy it. People
is this
will
a
buy it.
real thing? Like you are gonna buy, oh, you don't even have real shoes, but you have like tons of metaverse shoes, like
Yeah. I mean, people buy NFT avatars that are
God.
worth exactly nothing.
Yeah, that too.
And I mean, okay, like if you buy original Banksy's graffiti, that's only one of them in existence. It may be worth something because, you know, he's a famous artist and cultural establishment has deemed his work to have value, therefore it has value. Even though if you particularly don't like what it how it looks, you could say like, oh, to me that's worth zero, but to some art collector that could be worth thousands of dollars. And then there's NFT, they have the uniqueness property. But that's about it. And even then, it's not unique in the sense, I mean, okay, out of that entire algorithm, it generated a unique picture, but it's still copyable infinite amount of times. So who cares? It's like, but people still bought, people, a lot of people bought into the hype. When I heard about, like, when I'm sort of following the crypto space. And when I hear about different things, I was like, okay, the crypto itself is really interesting. Smart contracts are fairly interesting, but we haven't really tapped their potential fully yet. DAOs are interesting in principle. And what is it? In ICOs was the hype that I was trying to remember, like the initial coin offering. I immediately said, like, yeah, that's horseshit. It's just a scam to rip people out of their money. NFTs, it's like, again, another scam to rip people off. And it ended up being that, more or less. Like, nobody really cares about NFTs. So shoes in metaverse, I mean, people, you know how much people pay for CSGO skins? Like there's skins, like just like some knife skin that costs $25,000 on Steam Market. It's a skin for a virtual item in a game. It's a bunch of pixels and they're rare. But again, I mean, Valve can create infinite amount of them by press of the button. They don't because they know it'll tank the value. And every time you trade on Steam, they get a cut. So it works out to their advantage. It's like same thing with Magic the Gathering. They have that one ring card that supposedly like there's only one and it costs like a shit ton of money.
So
And
people
recently they
just
had other cards from like the Lord of the Rings. I don't remember. I don't know exactly the whole drama about it. I just heard of it tangentially, but apparently Wizards of the Coast have printed a whole bunch of cards and diluted the market and the price has tanked. So it's like, why would you invest into something that can be arbitrarily created? But you know, then you know, why would you invest in US dollar because it could be arbitrarily created? So who the hell knows?
yeah. Yeah, but it's an interesting concept to me. It's a challenge to admit, you know, like these kind of things will happen. Like, you know, maybe then what will life look like, really? Like, we'll all be some avatar somewhere buying shoes that you cannot wear, or like, what would life look like? We go to work in the metaverse? I don't know. It's a weird thing. But we'll see. It's like you said, like the NFT thing. I think it's. I was just wondering just now that imagine if we during the hype of NFTs, like you know, imagine if like the people who were selling those arts, those rare arts or something like that. Imagine if we like had
Rare
like
arts.
rare art. Like if we have these AI tools that we have now at that those times, like Midjourney and DALL-E, I think most people will just create like many of them, and it's yeah, for sure it's rare, it doesn't exist anywhere else, but yeah,
Control
is it what
C, Control V. Now it exists everywhere else.
is it what like $30 million, or how much this? I think there was this guy, I don't know what's he's a very popular guy on LinkedIn, V
Oh,
Gary
okay.
V.
Gary Vaynerchuk?
Exactly. Yeah, like that guy. Yeah. Like he was saying a lot of things about how he made so much money selling NFTs, and him and there's this other guy, this boxer guy from YouTube, I
Well, I
think.
mean, okay, so if he's really popular on LinkedIn, it means he has a lot of followers, and if he can create hype, a certain percentage of those people are going to buy in and spend their money. So yeah, of course he made a lot of money, but that it's not indicative of anything really, except that, you know, he can hype up a thing and have an audience to collect from. Many such cases. But, you know, going back to the whole metaverse thing, have you seen the movie Surrogates with Bruce Willis?
No,
Oh,
not yet.
it's quite an it's an older movie, and it's basically they created these lifelike androids who you sort of like plug in. It's kind of like instead of plugging in into the Matrix and live in a virtual world, you plug in into this avatar that is physical and lives in physical world, but it has like sensation and, you know, it looks good, it looks hot, and like all the guys are like very muscular and athletic, and all the girls are like very like slim and very sexy looking. And everybody essentially navigates through life through these avatars. And it kind of gets it gets interesting. So check that movie out. It's really quite
Surrogates.
interesting. Surrogates, yeah, it's an older one.
I mean, you know, now I'm curious, right, about how will all these tools be useful to us in our space, like in our industry. We know about them now. Some of these things that we call hypes have been lingering for a long time now. For example, Web3, for example, no code, and the rest that we've been talking about. But I'm curious, like, how do they turn to money, really? Like, for example, when you hear Web3, people say a lot of things like when you start developing with Web3, you make a lot of money. How is that happening? Like, is this like
Do you know the expression, a fool and his money will soon be parted? To
not really.
me, that's how they hype it up and they promise returns and they get people to invest and it ends in tears.
But there is a lot of following on this thing. Like, if you check the Discord channel that I mentioned about, there's thousands of people in this channel.
Sure, there is thousands of people who believe that they can make a quick buck doing these things, and there's also people, okay, like for every genuinely good idea, how many scams are there gonna be? Like it's so like, you know, so first we had Bitcoin, right? It was open source. It took years for it to achieve mainstream success. I remember certain milestones in Bitcoin's history because I was there very early. I remember Bitcoin costing 35 cents US per. I remember when Bitcoin hit $1 per, that was like a big deal, right? One whole dollar per Bitcoin. It's crazy. And back then, if you are mining Bitcoin, every time you successfully mine it, you get 50 Bitcoin. So that's like, wow, I can get $50, right? I mean, now it costs like 38,000 Canadian. So, and then I
Imagine.
remember the $100 milestone. I remember a $1,000 milestone. I remember the $10,000 milestone. It took it a long time to get there. And then somebody's like, well, Bitcoin's nice, but transaction speed is really slow. We kind of, and limit is really low. We kind of want to do something else. So we'll do Litecoin. And literally, GitHub clone, replace Bitcoin with Litecoin, replace, like, tweak some parameters in the seed block.
It is Litecoin.
Off to the races. It is Litecoin now. And Litecoin, I actually haven't looked at where Litecoin is, but Litecoin, it was like considered like the Bitcoin was kind of like the gold and Litecoin was kind of like the silver because it was considerably cheaper, but there was a lot of volume in it as well because people were sort of investing in both. And then people were like, are you telling me I can create my own crypto by literally spending 20 minutes and hype and drive the price and be a billionaire? And then it was off to the races. It was whatever, you know, the term shitcoin came out around that time because everybody and their dog was making another fork of Bitcoin. I mean, Ethereum was something else entirely because I think Vitalik is like a turbo nerd and he actually believes in it not from extracting money out of idiots type deal. To him, it's like an actual vision of the future. So Ethereum is completely different. And then people started cloning Ethereum all the same. So all of a sudden, there's been this explosion of shitcoins, which completely detracted this whole concept from the mainstream audience. Because when it got in mainstream, immediately the shitcoin started, and everyone's like, oh, crypto is just a way to scam people. There's nothing more. And they like discount the years and years and years of everything that's been happening in that space, you know, like the crypto anarchists and the Ethereum smart contract people, all of these things. And to them, it's just like scam. A lot of people on the internet who are like investors, their face just contorts into this grimace as if they're smelling something completely unpleasant anytime anyone brings crypto, and they just be like, ugh, crypto is just garbage, garbage,
Yeah,
garbage.
but
So,
would you blame them though?
exactly, because they don't understand the intrinsic properties of it. They associate a lot of the crappiness of this whole scam boom that happened, and that's it. Like, we've lost them. So.
You know, I wouldn't blame them because recently there is a popular YouTuber who actually did something like that. You probably would know him. He created a coin and then he used this influence to like and then they call it bust. How do you say that? There's something like that. Like
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I think I know what you're talking about. This other YouTuber did like a whole expose on him. And essentially it's like, yeah, you have a 5 million 13-year-olds following you on your YouTube for your pranks, and now you're gonna market them your cryptocurrency, so they're gonna take their mom's credit card and buy a whole bunch, and that's how you made your $1 billion. Congratulations, you're a scumbag.
You see, now then you see why it's difficult to blame anyone. I think there was also another scenario. There was one time, I think there's this movie that came out recently. It was the I forgot the name of this movie now. There was a game in the movie. The entire movie was like a game.
Is it Ready Player One?
No.
No.
It's a very popular movie. Come on, can you imagine? I can't even remember the title of the movie. Yeah, but at the end of the day, there was another coin that came out with the name of the movie. And people actually bought this thing. And at the end of the day, it turned out to be scam. Can you see? Like, it's difficult to, and you can't trace these people. So that's why
Well, hey,
it's
like, I
very
mean,
difficult.
everybody or most people have watched Wolf of Wall Street, right? A guy just pump and dumping penny stocks. And
That's
you
it.
know, other great before Wolf of Wall Street, there was The Boiler Room. And The Boiler Room is a really great movie because it's very kind of down to earth, very gritty. It's not very glamorous. It like stars very young Vin Diesel and Ben Affleck, I think, in it, where they run like a boiler room, which is a slang term for like a pump and dump, fly by night penny stock operation. It's a really good movie, and it shows how people get duped into parting with their money and they lose everything. So nothing is new under the sun. And just because it's in a different format in terms of crypto and NFT, and there can be throwing a lot of hype on top of it, that doesn't really, it doesn't change the human nature.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, but would you still say advise like people to learn Web3? Do you think it is a
I don't know. I think you have to, you have to learn what interests you. I think I can't speak for anybody, but I think that risk of it's like, hey, I have this great idea and I can build it on Web3 and benefit the world, but look how easy it is to just extract dollars out of people without doing anything productive. Let's do that instead. I have the skills. So I don't know.
So you wouldn't say anything new. I mean, so let's say hypothetically, if I come to you and say, "Oh, Vasily, am I considering to switch or like to start developing Web3 and
I'll start nervously patting my pockets, checking where my wallet is. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't really worked in these types of companies. I haven't really done anything to do with Web3. I have passively put some money into these things, and so far they have lost like 80% of their value entirely. And maybe they'll bounce back 10 years down the line, who knows? Stranger things have happened. Would I be personally interested in going into this space? Probably not. To be honest with you, like, I get Bitcoin. To some degree, I get Ethereum. Web3, I just don't get it. And
Same.
I haven't really spent any effort to get it. And again, mostly because it's precipitated by all of the rampant scamming that's going on. I was like, I don't really want to touch it. And maybe that's a bad thing. Maybe there is some idea there that is actually useful. I think there's a lot of ideas in that space that are useful in one way or another that can leverage blockchain and smart contracts and things like that. Like, for instance, I don't know, like land title records. Like, if you can establish provenance for a certain piece of land through the blockchain and all the transactions, instead of involving like a billion lawyers and attorneys and notaries and the tax office, you could just have a smart contract where you can assign rights and it's captured and it's there. Like, why the hell not? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of people who are not going to be very happy with that, namely the lawyers, the notaries, and the city's tax office, because hey, they want their cash. And so I think, in the infancy of crypto movement, there was like this big influence of like crypto anarchism. It's like, hey, we have a solution to the centralized bank problem. We can build parallel society. And we can trade using crypto and we don't have to pay taxes. We can do our own thing. And I totally understand that sentiment. Like, I'm a very libertarian guy in general. I'm like big fan of Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged, and I think like the Gulch thing, it requires a very high caliber of people to be able to pull it off. And again, because it all boils down to human nature, I don't think it's gonna work out, but a guy can dream. And so, but then what happened was the companies that started interfacing crypto with the fiat appeared, and instead of trading in crypto, you could trade crypto itself into fiat to get goods and services. And that was very convenient because, in Vancouver 10 years ago, like three or four stores have accepted Bitcoin, and that was kind of a gimmick because it wasn't very practical, right? You go in, you
Are they
send it.
still there?
Yeah, they're still there. There's a bunch of places that do. But the thing is, they do it now through those fiat bridges. They don't accept Bitcoin natively. Like, you pay with Bitcoin, but they get dollars. So they don't care if it's Bitcoin or cowrie shells or those gigantic stone wheels from one of those islands, you know, because they get paid in dollars. They don't give a shit. And because now there's this gatekeeper in between fiat and crypto, that whole crypto anarchy movement is done because they got us by their throat, by our throat rather, because nobody's trading crypto directly. I'm not paying the merchant in Bitcoin. He does not keep Bitcoin and then spends it to cover his bills through other merchants. No, he gets dollars. And if the processing company decides to cut me off, that's it. So the crypto anarchist dream is mostly dead. So, you know, good work on part of fiat money crowd. GG, well done. We'll have to think of something else.
I mean, when you were talking just now, I just remember there's this funny story that I read about. I feel bad for things like this because it shouldn't be happening. There was a guy who attempted to sell a virtual land to someone in Metaverse for like millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Land. We don't even have Metaverse.
The Earth 2 or whatever it was called.
Oh my God. Like, how do you fall for these kind of scams though? Like, how?
Some people are very susceptible to hype, I think. And promises of great returns. Promises of great returns are blinding pretty much everybody. You have to be really, really, really cautious not to be susceptible to that. So again, human nature can do crap about it.
Would you want to have a virtual land? Like, let's say,
I can launch a Minecraft server in the next 10 minutes and have infinite amount of virtual land that's of no use to anyone, including myself. So no.
What would you want about a virtual land? When I heard that story, I was like, yeah, that's just wild. Like,
well, you know, okay, ambitions. I'll give you this. Back in the day, when I was single at the time and had a lot of disposable income, I was getting a lot of things off Kickstarter. And thankfully, I picked fairly well. Like 99% of things I got off Kickstarter, I actually have received. So, because there's a lot of Kickstarters that failed and people never got anything. Mm-hmm. And I liked getting things that are more unique. Like, for instance, I have a set of playing dice cut out of titanium. Completely useless. They're not really practical in any way. But I think there's maybe like 50 sets like that on a planet. Mm-hmm. And I like knowing the fact that I'm one of the 50 that owns it. I'm as susceptible to this BS as anybody else because they have no practical utility, but it's like, I have it and you do not, and you can't get it anymore. So, you know, F you. And it's the same thing there. It's like, oh, you can be the first person to own the entire continent of Africa in Earth 2 for a mere sum of $15,000 and nobody will be able to have it. And then you can resell it to other people for money. Dollar signs, cha-ching, you know, like Mr. Krabs style. So, yeah. No.
I guess that must have been the conversation, really, because I couldn't just understand it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it is what it is.
It is what it is.
These are the things like I just was thinking about, you know, just wanted to check with you.
Yeah.
But thank you for talking about this things, because like it has helped me to understand more about like crypto, the crypto world, because it's really dark. Like, it's not something that we all get to really understand, really, because even some of us that invest in crypto, we just do it because we hope to make money from it.
Yeah.
We don't even just know how the money even is coming about, or like
I think, but, a lot of people don't really understand money in general, so they should read some Mises and Hayek, like the theory of money and credit and things like that. And
do you think do you have some like financial books in terms of like crypto that you can recommend to people?
No. And I think my views on financial investing is, again, I don't really invest. And even if I would, I do follow a couple of investment channels in Telegram. They are in Russian though, so but they do base it on other available books that are in English. And they mostly have to do with passive investment, where you don't day trade, you don't pick stocks, you invest into highly diversified
Portfolios.
portfolios, massively diversified, like not the same industry, not the same continent. So they're very balanced. And then there's like a rebalancing strategy that you do every once in a while. And essentially, you just sit there and you wait and you don't do anything because you don't want to be paying commission fees to your broker for every transaction you do. You don't want to be, again, like I read about that industry, and there's also a lot of hype in attempting to sell people financial instruments that are not to their advantage because they don't understand how these things work. So it's literally pervasive. It's everywhere. Like you want to go trading, some trader is going to be like, oh, I have this magic formula because, hey, returns, and everyone's cha-ching, and off they go to the races, losing all of their money. So basically, yeah, very slow and steady, and no knee-jerk reactions. Historically, over the course of 20, 30 years, it will outperform basically anything in general, just because the economy, planetary economy, is growing. So if you invest into it in that sense, it's growing, and 30 years from now, you're going to be better off. And just to remember a bunch of years back where they had a monkey picking a bunch of random stocks by like throwing darts at a wall, and that portfolio outperformed like half of Wall Street. Yeah, because it's random. No, like nobody really knows anything about that industry. Like, I mean, there's people who can exploit vulnerabilities and situations that other people create because of their greed. Like the whole Wall Street Bets thing with GameStop. That wasn't like a natural phenomenon. That was a bunch of people who got really greedy shorting these stocks, and they got punished for it. Somebody saw that weakness, and that weakness got exploited. But that doesn't mean that that's a surefire way of making money. It just happened to work that one time. And I think also because it happened to work that one time, everybody kind of freaked out. The financial regulators freaked out that like they were preventing people from buying stocks and all of these other things. But on the flip side of that, all of the people who made a whole bunch of money doing this thought that they know the game now. And within the next year, they subsequently lost everything and then some, because it
Yeah,
was
I didn't
just
know the game.
yeah, it like you can't replicate those conditions, because now you've shown how the sausage is made, you've shown how the trick works, and all the smart people in finance who have been doing it for years, they're like, we haven't thought of that. Let's plug that hole and continue on our merry way. And so that thing doesn't work anymore. So GG.
What? Who is Gigi?
Good game.
Oh, okay.
You haven't played much online games, I guess.
Apparently,
Yeah.
no, not really. I play just sports games like FIFA.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
So
anyway.
yeah, if you play Counter-Strike or something like that, at the end of the
Yeah.
match, GG.
GG.
Yeah,
Okay.
good game.
I'll try.
Oh,
But yeah,
don't go into don't go into Counter-Strike. It's cancer.
why?
Oh,
Because
it's
it's like Call of Duty, no?
no. It's way more technical. I mean, it
Than
is an
Call of Duty.
esport. It is an esport, and I used to watch, like, I haven't really watched too many esports, in a sense that, back in the day, StarCraft was all the rage, and Koreans thoroughly dominated everybody playing StarCraft. And then there was this one American kid who like finally won in Korea against the Korean champion, and it was like a big deal. And in fact, it was such a big deal that in Korea they would translate, like they'd broadcast these games. There would be like a stadium of people, full of people watching these guys playing StarCraft on like these huge screens. That's how popular it was. I don't know, probably, I don't know if it still is. There's actually a little documentary on the YouTube about this guy who was like, I want to become the best StarCraft player in the world. And his family was very supportive of him. It was a really kind of interesting, because usually parents is like, stop playing video games and, get a
Oh
job.
no, it's life different. Life is oh
Yeah,
no.
yeah. So that
That's
was
another
pretty
thing.
good. Yeah.
That's another thing. Yeah, like life is really different now. Like you can literally do anything and make a living out of it.
I would say maybe 0.5% to a 1% can do anything and make a living out of it. Even going back to the OnlyFans example, like they did some stats on how much these girls make. There are a handful of girls who make millions of dollars, but the median monthly paycheck for an OnlyFans model was something like $300. So you're like you're selling your soul and your dignity for $300 a month. But because you have these examples of these crazy popular OnlyFans girls that make millions, you think you'll be there one day. And as with everything, it's like you're not going to be an NBA champion, you're not going to be an NFL champion, you're not going to be the top earning person on OnlyFans. For most people, all of those things are true. But, you know, the hype is there and they think I'll be the one. I'll make it. I'll make millions. So
So the reason why I said you can do anything these days is because, like, I think what we call jobs now are quite different. Like, before now, like, you have to either be an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer to actually have a meaning with your life. Because and now you can be literally anything. Literally, you can be a content creator. You can be
right. But again,
YouTube is a job now.
YouTube is a job. But again,
it's a full-time job
for
now.
every Mr. Beast that makes millions of dollars, and I mean, I've seen some excerpts of from interviews with this guy. That guy's like, he's a beast and he's like a machine. He doesn't have a life. He openly says that he doesn't have a life. He spends all of his waking hours doing content. He does a lot of really clever things with how he like markets his stuff. But for every Mr. Beast out there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people who make jack shit,
Yeah, that's
thinking
true.
that they can get there. And some of them might get to some level of it where they can have a comfortable existence that they also could have had by working a job, right? But the thing is, YouTube content creation is a perishable skill. Like if everything goes south one day, if you're a carpenter or a plumber or an electrician, you'll be okay. If you're a content creator, you're fucked completely. So, I don't know. Invest your time and resources wisely. Have a fallback option, you know?
That's the idea. You see, like, I think that's the idea behind, like, thinking about all these trends and development these days. Like, you want to know, like, what can you do with your spare time, when you're
Yeah.
not, like, busy just getting through
Everybody's trying to
tickets or, like,
monetize their spare time.
it's the way the economy looks like now,
Yeah, yeah.
like, you have to figure something out, to think of something. And just like keep moving and all. So that's the reason why most
Yeah.
people fall for these ideas, or like look for things like Web3, for example, or like look for things like NFTs.
Yeah.
You want to
I
make
think
like quick
yeah.
money,
I think that again, the human nature part is people want easy money because like they think that how hard could it be? And again, I think that was like the very first episode. It's like, how hard could it be? It's really hard. It's really hard. Creating content, like they think that, oh, you know, I'll start streaming on YouTube and I'll be a millionaire. It's like, yeah, maybe 5 years down the line, you'll start making some money. And a lot of people try it because like everybody knows that plumbing is hard. Everybody knows that like being a carpenter sitting on a roof in mid-August under sweltering hot sun for hours at a time, carrying heavy implements and like banging with hammers, that's hard. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that medical school takes 10 years and it's just a grueling existence. Everybody knows that becoming a lawyer takes 10 years and you have to be like of a certain capacity to do that. But for all of the new things, people think it's not that hard because they have no idea. And then, you know, reality hits you like a ton of bricks because it is hard. Everything is hard. So, but, you know,
Yeah, but yeah, that's
yeah.
the thing. Everything is hard. Everything is hard, but there are different people with like different abilities.
Yeah.
So, for example, the way Mr. Beast is, he creates like millions and a lot of contents, and like he makes good videos. But imagine Mr. Beast as a
Yeah.
software developer.
I don't know. I mean,
Or imagine Mr. Beast as a lawyer or as a doctor, would he be that successful? Like,
the
that's what I'm
thing,
trying to
okay,
say.
the thing, actually, you know what? I think he would because he has the job
Maybe.
ethic. He has the job ethic. He's willing to put like 20 hours in a day into this thing to make it as
Absolutely,
successful as
maybe.
possible. So I think
Maybe.
regardless of the domain that he'd be in, he would be successful because he
Actually,
can
yeah,
put the
you're right.
pedal to the metal and do it regardless. He doesn't have a life, he doesn't have a girlfriend, he doesn't have kids. Like, this thing is all he does. And again, if you are a person that can just hyper focus on one thing and do it, you'll be very
Yeah,
successful. Sorry, I'm getting tongue tied.
you're right. That's actually true. I wasn't thinking about that because I was thinking about how, like, fishes don't fly. Some people are really good at being a fish,
I've
and
seen
they
some
can
flying
fly.
fish though, you know. They swim really fast and they have these big kind of flipper thingies, and then they get out of the water and they've like we were in Hawaii and we're driving the boat and these flying fish start popping out of the water and they fly for like 15, 20 meters out in the air. So fish do
Yeah, but
fly.
it can be an eagle
They can be an
kind of
eagle,
fly.
but they can still fly. And then there's some birds who can dive underwater and spend like 5 minutes underwater. I remember watching
Really?
like this cormorant just like plonk, and then he disappears. And like 5 minutes goes by. It's like, holy hell, that bird is dead. And then he pops up right back up. So,
Birds in water.
yeah.
Shouldn't they like feathers like repel water or something?
They do
How?
repel water. They coat them with like oil.
Oh.
Whenever you see the bird preening with its beak, it's actually applying oil to the feathers to get weatherproofed.
They know they do this themselves.
Yeah.
This is
They have like
first of it.
they have an oil gland that they secrete the oil from, and then they apply it to their feathers with their own beak so they stay waterproof. Hence the expression
Interesting.
like water off goose's back, because it rolls right off.
Interesting, interesting. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's about it for me today. Thank you very much, Vasily, for your time. It's really nice talking to you,
It
like
is
always.
Yes, always really nice talking to you. I think we had a really interesting conversation today. I haven't had a chance to talk about crypto in a while, so that was pretty good. And yeah, for all of
Continue.
you that have been watching, thank you very much for being with us. Like, share, and subscribe. Join the Telegram, that whole shebang, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
See you. Bye.